Spark Media presents Cosmic Creatures by Jason Kent Nord. Performed for you by Adam Anagnostu, Mike Kelly, John Yonker, and Luke Langfeld. Sound design by Dan Steffens. This episode contains content that may be alarming to some listeners. Please check the episode notes for more detailed descriptions. And now, Episode 9, Quarks.
Unbelievable. No, it's unbelievable. I make the absolute soul-crushing decision to leave Kale so he can have a better life, and what happens? The damned United States military won't let me leave town. I've tried both directions. What in the holy hell is going on? The news at the hospital said something about animal attacks. I mean, it's got to be those vicious, weird-ass birds, but the military for some birds? There's got to be more. I wonder what else is lurking that would prompt this. Where would they have even come from? There's nothing in either Portman or Benoit that deals with lab animals or chemicals or any of that crap. I mean, there's the place Doc Hagen works at, but I... The unthinkable prospect suddenly poisons me. Could something have happened there that's the cause of all this chaos? Oh, God, I pray nothing has happened to Doc Hagen. I try to steady my breathing, but my ribs and the constriction of the corset makes it difficult. I grip the steering wheel tight, telling myself it's just nerves, nothing more. But what if Doc Hagen isn't okay? The idea sends a wave of panic crashing over me. No. No, that can't be. Kale needs him. He needs a smart, stable father figure like him. Someone who understands his unique abilities. Oh, God, I feel like I could explode. A heart attack, a stroke, anything to end this torment. I roll down the windows of the conversion van, needing fresh air. But the stillness provides no relief. Here I am, in a stolen van with broken ribs, unable to escape town, and all because I thought I was doing the right thing. Now it just feels like some horrible axe is going to drop. They're going to find me, arrest me, and make me face up to Kale and what I've done. Well, shit! There isn't much I can do about it now. There are no do-overs in life. And if there were, I'd have used all of mine up by now. Fate has never been kind to me, and I'm sorry, but the corset doesn't count. Largely hidden in the shadows of the football bleachers, I peer through the windshield at the sturdy brick school building. It lies beyond the chain-link fence that encircles the football grounds, save for the access gate that I had entered through. The high school should have let out a couple of hours ago, but the asshole at the checkpoint said the kids would be sheltered in place here. Glancing around, I spot a school bus blocking each end of the school's parking lot. I know from experience the town only has 5 police cars, which must be elsewhere. Perhaps responding to reports of a stolen ambulance and conversion van, if not this animal business. Right now, my sole concern is Kale's well-being. Once I'm certain he's safe, I'll give leaving another shot. But before anything else, I need to see that he's all right. No matter what happens, I just can't let him see me. If they release the kids, I'll duck down and then bolt once I spot him. At that point, I could relocate to the gravel lot behind the liquor store, but that might be too close to the military checkpoint for comfort. I might have to park near the bar and hide behind their dumpsters. Sadly, I've spent a couple of nights there before. I don't think I could handle the smell of the empty liquor bottles, though. I'm already having a hard time. I'd probably only last 10 minutes before going inside for a drink, and I'd likely end up getting recognized and turned in, or beat up. I'm sure word has gotten around. I fall into a bleak, bleary-eyed stare, slumping down as far as I can in the driver's seat. But I've done this to myself. I've failed to cope, always playing the victim, always poor me. Poor What the hell was that?
The loud, rustling sound came from the trees and bushes that separates the school grounds from the neighboring homes. It startles me enough to sit up and reflexively reach for keys, just in case I need to start the engine and flee. There's a large movement through the bushes, and I lean forward, straining to focus on what I am seeing. Something much larger than a person is emerging and moving into the school's parking lot. I blink a few times in pure confusion. Damned if it doesn't look like the trees themselves are walking toward the school. What appears to be a collection of 12-foot-tall bare tree trunks, like 7 of them, are joined by a mass near the top. It's all one thing, and it's moving toward the school like a giant puppet of chopsticks. So, not just birds, then. No wonder the military is here. I follow the freaky tree walker thing's apparent line of sight and watch as the school's rear gymnasium door creaks open. A pair of kids stumble out, playfully pushing and shoving each other. They're obliviously moving in the tree walker's direction. Even though they're on the other side of the fence, and a good 30 yards away, their voices carry well through the open van window. It also helps that they're obnoxiously loud.
Justin, you're such a dick! You're going to get me suspended!
One of them complains. Something about the name Justin is familiar, but I can't immediately place it.
We'll go back in then, pussy, Justin retorts.
As I wait for them to notice the freaky tree walker thing, I glance over at it and see that it clearly hones in on them. It raises 2 of its trunks, one after the other, and points toward the boys with a stabbing motion. The delinquents don't seem to notice. The creature then sets its trunks back into the ground and leans forward towards them.
Shit, Russell. What's the move here? I mutter to myself.
I can't risk being seen, especially by some punks who might gleefully inform Kale that his deadbeat dad is lurking around.
Nah, fuck this shit,
Justin declares to his friend, both still oblivious to their audience.
This mutant animal crap is nonsense. It's probably just a rabid dog or some crackhead making shit up.
The tree walker moves again, advancing steadily toward them through the cars in the parking lot. The way it slides between vehicles, deftly navigating with all 7 limbs, is mesmerizing. I'm definitely getting major horror movie vibes, especially since the boys still haven't spotted it. Should I yell? Or honk?
Yeah, but still,
Justin's unfortunate companion begins before Justin interrupts.
I mean, where are these so-called mysterious creatures?
He dramatically gestures with his arms and starts a mock survey of the area.
Do you see any? Oh, shit!
They see the freakish intruder now.
Thank God. Now get the hell back inside, you idiots!
The tree walker slows its approach upon being spotted, coming to a stop about 30 feet from them. The boys only partially retreat a couple of steps back toward the door, their eyes glued to the bizarre beast. I can't help but stare, too, unable to comprehend its anatomy or how it came into existence. It looks like nothing else on Earth. The closest comparison I can think of is those bugs that look like twigs, but this is entirely different. These are gigantic twigs joined together by a weird mass of wrinkled flesh.
The door's locked!
Justin's friend shouts in a panic, banging on it with his fist.
Dude!
Justin yanks him away from the door, seemingly more worried about getting caught.
Just chill and check this thing out!
The kid hides behind Justin, who resumes sizing up the creature.
Hey there!
The punk searches for some witty insult.
Pencil legs!
I scoff.
Justin!
The other boy whines. Wait a second. Justin is the name of that kid who tortures Kale.
Is this what's got the whole town spooked? The creature from Planet Nerd?
Justin enjoys building up his bravado and takes a couple of sauntering macho strides forward.
Dude, be careful,
protests his pal.
Careful. Why? What's it gonna do? Cast a shadow on us? Justin sneers.
This stupid kid.
He doesn't realize the danger he's in. How fast that thing can move. As much as I'd like to see this punk find something out the hard way, I still feel the need to intervene.
Crap! What do I do?
Justin's continued mocking is really pushing it now. Worst of all, he makes a short, bluff charge toward the creature. It provokes a micro-retreat from the undoubtedly confused creature that buoys Justin and fills him with laughter. That's enough. I can't just stand by and watch any longer. The tall fence separating them from the football field has one of those spinning metal gates where spectators enter. If the gym door is locked, the gate might be within reach. While there's no chance that thing could navigate it, there's also no telling if it has the strength to just plow through the fence. I can't afford to hesitate. I swing open the van door, drop 1 foot to the ground, and call out while pointing, "Get away from it! Go through the gate!" Two things happen in quick succession. First, the boys are startled by my sudden presence, and they dumbfoundedly gawk at me. Second, the tree walker performs a terrifically mesmerizing movement, where it stomps each limb one by one in a circular pattern, almost like a warning. And then it resumes its movement. Its pace isn't as swift as in the parking lot, but it's still faster than the boys have seen it move. Initially, the creature heads toward the fence, toward me, but then it abruptly changes direction, turning sharply toward the boys. Justin's pal doesn't hesitate, and he full-on races to the gate, no doubt boosted by a surge of adrenaline. Meanwhile, Justin pauses, taken aback by the unfolding spectacle. He stumbles in his first retreating steps, but quickly regains his footing, retreating a few yards before halting like a base runner waiting to see if a fly ball is catchable before racing to the next base. Surprisingly, Treewalker also comes to a jittering stop, almost mimicking Justin's action. Justin turns his head toward his buddy who made it through the turnstile and is rushing my direction. Justin then takes further note of me.
Who the hell?
Before he can finish, Treewalker clatters toward him with surprising agility. Justin runs, but Treewalker is quickly upon him. With a deft sweep of a limb, it trips Justin, who crashes into a heap right in front of the gate. Treewalker then moves on top of him, strategically positioning its limbs to stomp forcefully near sensitive areas, within a wisp of his ear, in the crook of his armpit, and dangerously close to his crotch. Two more limbs, slowly but firmly, pin his arms to the ground, eliciting a pained scream from the kid.
Stop!
I yell at the creature as I slam the van's driver's door shut. The sudden noise causes the beast to swing itself toward me with a slight lean. Despite its lack of distinguishable features, a chill shoots up my spine as I sense it must be glaring directly at me.
Let him go,
I command, raising both hands in the universal stop gesture. Please, I continue.
Let him be. He's not a threat to you.
I'm emoting as earnestly as I can, and I can only hope it understands. Justin's pained moans continue. His pal is drifting over toward me for protection. The absurdity of that notion strikes me for a moment, but whatever.
Please,
I offer in a more subdued tone, attempting to elicit a matching response.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Treewalker kicks out a limb, striking the fence hard. Both Justin's pal and I startle backward at the violent outburst. The fence wobbles and sways for yards in each direction, mangled at the point of impact. It ain't going to hold that thing back, I realize in a panic.
Get in the van, kid, I urge Justin's friend, making a break for the driver's seat myself. Don't leave me,
Justin screams behind me.
I want to scream back. That's not really the plan.
But the fact is, I don't really have one. All I know is I'm not doing anything next without the protection of American steel and wheels.
Also, I'm at least saving this other kid who isn't a complete asshole. Hopping in, we slam our doors shut. I fire up the engine, turn on the headlights, and flash the high beams. Treewalker remains hunkered over Justin, but seems to be transfixed on the van. God damn it, I've got one idea. I pop the conversion van into gear, hit the gas, and charge right toward Treewalker, all the while blaring the horn. What are you doing? Shrieks the kid next to me. I'm not insane, I growl, and then slam on the brakes, skidding to a stop inches short of the fence. Treewalker scuttles back from the fence, stepping hard on Justin's groin in the process. Justin writhes in pain, unable to take advantage of his release. Get up! I scream out the open passenger window, which is closer to the gate and this stupid punk. Justin, in tears, manages to roll onto his knees, but he just cannot get to his feet. Treewalker repeats its mad stomping ritual a few yards away. Just leave him! The kid next to me stammers in fear. I don't blame him. A voice in me is saying the same thing. But nonetheless, and cursing my ribs all the way, I find myself leaping into the back seat, heaving the sliding door wide open and jumping into the fray. It's just a couple of steps to and through the spinning gate. As I reach the other side of the fence, I'm too afraid to look at the creature. With force, I snatch Justin up by the armpits and shove him hard into the spinning gate. There's no room for two. Using the moment it takes for him to spin through to peek back, I realize the thing is fast approaching. I charge through, sending Justin bouncing out of his side of the turnstile and stumbling to the ground in agony. All the hairs on my back spring up as that sick tingle of impending doom washes over me. One of the limbs strikes the bars hard, catching me enough in the back to reignite the searing pain of my cracked ribs. I make it through the spinning gate and turn to see the beast's limb is jammed. Treewalker is stuck in the gate. I want to help Justin up, but there is no way my searing ribs will allow it. Get in, is all the support I can offer. Thankfully, his pal has braved his way out to help wrestle Justin in through the open sliding door of the van. As I slide into the driver's seat, I steal a glance back at the chaos of their entry into the rear of the van. There are patches of crimson staining Justin's left hoodie sleeve and the crotch of his pants. Ouch! Broken ribs suddenly don't seem so bad. Outside, the Treewalker's relentless assault on the fence intensifies, a warning that time's damn near up. It ain't gonna hold much longer, and we gotta haul ass out of here. When the back door shuts, I throw us in reverse, stop, shift, and floor it. The tires violently tear through the gravel and claw us back down the path behind the football stands, leading us through the gate and out onto the road behind the school property. Rejoining the street sends a sharp jab through my ribs, but the pain is accompanied by the relief of being officially extracted from that nightmare. Justin cries, "It hurts!" "We've got to get him to the hospital," says his worried pal, which I note is quite a different tune to his previous suggestion of ditching the guy. But damn, he's right. I can't just leave the kid on the side of the road, even if he might deserve it. I wonder if the police are there. I am not getting caught for this kid. No way. For Kale? Yeah. But not for this punk. Oh, shit. I still don't know if Kale is okay or not. Is Kale Rhodes inside the school with everyone else? I ask, studying the two kids in the rearview mirror. Justin just moans, preoccupied with his pain. His pal looks at me, all funny. Feeling judged, I repeat the question as a demand. No, Justin's friend finally says, at least not that I saw. I don't know. Justin, did you see Kale?
Nah, that you're ditched. Just like his old man, Justin scowls.
The remark stings, but moreover, it alarms me. If Kale isn't at school, where is he? Do you know where he is? I probe.
Who gives a flying fuck, snipes Justin as he suffers.
Oh, shit, you're his dad,
the other kid starts before I cut him off. Uncle, I lie. I'm his uncle, and I need to find him. Do you know where he might be? How should I know? Justin's friend responds, seemingly buying my lie. He might be with Nick. Actually, I think Nick said something about skipping today to do something with his dad at his work or something.
It suddenly occurs to me that my genius boy may have been at Doc Hagen's science lab on the same day a bunch of strange creatures show up around town. Christ, are they related? Did something happen there after all?
No, I'm just feeling guilty and paranoid.
The soundtrack of Justin's moans and cries, coupled with the hospital looming ahead on the next block, snapped me back into the moment. Flashing lights and sirens emanating from the emergency entrance around the corner make it clear. Pulling in is too risky. Without a second thought, I pull over to an abrupt stop at the curb, right at the beginning of the block.
All right, I say to Justin's pal. You gotta get him in there. I can't help. My ribs are broken.
Well, then you should go in, too, he replies, flustered.
Jesus, just get me to the emergency room, you asshole!
Justin screams at me.
No, I can't, I start, trying to think of an excuse.
Can't you at least move up closer? Pleads the kid.
Grumbling, I pop the van into gear and scoot up the block. As soon as I see the tail end of a police cruiser, however, I stop abruptly, amplifying my own pain and the cries from the back seat. And then I spot the second emergency vehicle crowding the ER entrance. A QLI security vehicle. A rush of worries drown out further complaints from the back seat.
Get out now,
I demand with a bit too much fury.
But we're still not there,
the boy whines.
Why can't...
Screw it! I can't because I snuck out of there a couple of hours ago, I explode. And I need to get the hell out of here so I can stop screwing up Kale's life. Now get the fuck out!
Justin's pal eyes me as though I'm a creature he needs to flee from. Not to escape attack, but to escape a real creep. It stings.
Take me over there, cries Justin.
You were out there taunting that thing. This ain't my fault. I saved your ass, and did so despite telling my son for years that he needed to punch you in the fucking face, you bully loser.
Oh, I'm the loser, says the ass-beaten fuck who abandoned his own kid, he retorts.
Just go get him a wheelchair, I tell his friend through clenched teeth.
The kid opens the door and starts to go.
After you get him out of the van, I yell.
He returns and pulls Justin to the curb, all while Justin cries and works up one final insult.
You are such a dick,
is all he can muster through the pain. So many comebacks pop into my mind, all of which center on the current condition of his pecker. But I bite my tongue and pull away. Damn it. I taste blood.
Our scan turned up no creatures. It's both a relief and a disappointment. We didn't have to face them, but 37 problems have escaped. Well, 35 of them, outside the building anyway. The gravity of this conclusion weighs heavily on me. The prospect of locating all of the creatures in time to stave off a drastic large-scale military response seems impossible. Colonel Hardhead already wants to burn this entire place to the ground. However, I can't help but speculate whether the absence of remaining creatures will hasten his destructive plans or potentially postpone them, offering us an opportunity to study the incredible flora. Then again, I have my own fears about whether I should be so eager to continue exploring it or if it might bring about my demise. It's a terrifying reality. No human has antibodies for the bacteria that Dr. Mintz and I are essentially swimming in. Trillions of microscopic invaders have undoubtedly found their way into our lungs and bloodstreams by now. I try to reassure myself. I don't have a fever. My breathing is normal, and my racing heart is likely the result of all the excitement and anxiety. I take a deep breath and immediately wonder if it's calming or doing more damage. Ugh, I have to stop worrying about it. We're either dead or we're not. I'm taking it as a positive sign that we aren't yet. Dr. Mintz, having completed the sweep, walks over to me. I see in her eyes that she's come to the same conclusions as me. Nothing but flora, I state. She nods in agreement, but she's unusually silent, lost in her thoughts. Simultaneously, we ask each other, "You good?" The jinx coincidence draws rocky grins. Turning to the control room window, I notice Colonel Hardass eyeing us intensely. I sigh, raise the radio, and report, "There's nothing here but plant life." "Great," he replies flatly through the radio. "So we have 37 hostiles on the loose, and what, 9 have been killed? Your security men are back, by the way, and they took more casualties than they dished out. I've risked enough time already. I wish it weren't necessary, but we're elevating the response level. Firebombing will commence shortly. We'll extinguish every inch of a 20-mile radius outside of the town and this facility, both of which will stay under strict quarantine. At least until someone higher up decides we're expendable too." I press the button on the radio to answer, but don't say anything. Jawhens beats me to it. I watch as he confronts Colonel Harstead behind the observation window. He's animated by his standards, gesturing fervently at us and the capture bay. Colonel Harstead is dismissive at first, then gets in his face. Remarkably, Jawhens doesn't back down. Dr. Mintz and I turn to each other, equally puzzled and impressed by our famously dutiful technician. Colonel Hardhead stands quiet for a moment, says something brief, and they both disappear from the window. "Wait, hello?" I finally ask into the radio. Receiving no response, I give up and shrug. Dr. Mintz gives me a crooked smile. "Well, now what do we do?" she asks. "This is a disaster. We need to take samples, at least. What sort of storage protocols would be satisfactory, do you suppose?" "They'll seize them, Elliot." "They can't," I protest weakly, even while knowing she's right. Noises outside the battered door catch our attention. Are they going to let us out? I expected Hardhead to leave us in here all night. After the banging and cutting of bracework, the doorway barrier opens a crack, and Dr. Mintz and I push forward, eager to get out of here. "Stay back," orders a soldier. "You are not coming out. You've got company coming in." Jawhens bumps his way in, loaded down with equipment cases. "What exactly is going on?" Dr. Mintz demands, hands on hips. "Look," Jawhens begins, handing me a case. "We're all fully exposed anyway. Let's get to testing this stuff and see if we can figure out what we're up against. Maybe we can learn something helpful." There's a long pause before Dr. Mintz relents with a sigh. "All righty then, let's get started." And oddly enough, I find myself eager to have a new distraction from the doom that awaits.
It's almost entirely dark outside now, and angry, glowing animals are spazzing out in what was our only mode of transportation. "We need a plan," I declare. "Where's the radio?" Nick asks, looking nervously at the vehicle.
"I've got it," says Fitch.
He pulls it from his pocket and puts it to his loud mouth.
"Hello? Army men?"
"Seriously, Fitch?" I catch Nick's glance and roll my eyes.
"Hello? Anyone out there?"
Fitch repeats, inspecting the radio and pressing every button he can find.
"I don't think it's working."
Nick takes it and checks. "It's dead," he says. "We need new batteries."
"Do you think they all glow?"
Ellie interjects, her gaze fixed on the eerie lilac light seeping out from the station wagon windows. "I wouldn't be surprised," I say. "I saw them fleeing down the hall at QLI, and they all had unique coloration." "So, now what?" she asks. I glance at Nick, feeling a strange bit of confidence. With darkness falling, we have a much better chance to spot and locate these creatures. If we can't alert lab security or the military, then it might fall on us to take action and protect everyone. I wonder if Nick is following my train of thought. He appears to be mustering up some resolve, but I don't wait for him to voice it. We have to do this ourselves, I declare, surprised by the determination in my own voice.
Whoa!
Fitch objects. Look, I'm with Ellie. We need to get to town and tell the army guys. I don't want to go to town, contradicts Ellie. It's at least 5 miles to town. Home is only a mile or so back. We go home, get batteries, call it in, and then go hunting, Nick proposes. Trapping, I correct. We've got to set traps so we can catch some of them alive. Maybe that would help make up for things. Kale, Nick says with a warning. I know, I say, cutting off his reality check. Some of them may be too dangerous, sure, but we've got to do what we can either way. In fact, I add, we need some real guns. As much as I want to think they could all be captured unharmed, I've got to be realistic. I don't believe in killing tigers, but if I were charged by one, I wouldn't want a net as my only defense.
Oh, come on!
Fitch exclaims.
You guys are nuts! Abso-freaking nuts! You can't go monster hunting! Right? Ellie?
I catch her eye, pleading inside that she follows my instincts, hoping she sees an opportunity to make humane captures while also preparing ourselves for the greater dangers ahead, risks that I hesitate to fully acknowledge. If I did, I might lose my nerve. Admittedly, I know there are plenty of reasons to doubt that we could accomplish anything, but I just know that trying to make a difference feels right. If we can reduce the remaining threats, if a group of kids can accomplish that, then maybe the military will follow our lead and go after the scary leftovers. But I fear Ellie might veto the whole idea. What guns? She asks, much to my delight and Fitch's disappointment. My dad has a few, I say. I bet he left at least one.
What? Get real, complains Fitch. We can't use real guns. We're not adults.
Let's do it, Ellie agrees. I smile, but at the same time, a sense of unease creeps under my skin. I project the insecurity onto Fitch with a bravado-fueled dig.
Come on, Fitch. We'll take care of you, I say, winking at the others.
Yeah, Fitch, joins Ellie. Don't chicken out at us now. It gives me a surge of camaraderie and confidence that soothes my nerves. It's not the certainty of success that I feel, it's the thrill of the adventure. Or perhaps the sheer stupidity of it all. Either way, it's exactly what I need right now.
We hope you've enjoyed Cosmic Creatures, a Spark Media production. This program was directed and executive produced by H.G. Zeisler, featuring the voice talents of Adam Anagnostou as Kale Rhodes, Mike Kelly as Russell Rhodes, John Yonker as Dr. Elliot Hagen, and Luke Langfelt as Major Roggy. Text copyright 2022 by Jason Kent Nord. Illustrations including cover and episode art by Meredith Tuvey. Sound design by Dan Steffens. Story edits by Emily Nord and H.G. Zeisler. A special thanks to our founding Spark storytellers. Rest assured that no animals, cosmic or earthly, were harmed in the production of this episode. Enjoyed what you heard? Check out more Spark stories and find out more about Spark Media on our website, sparkmedia.com. That's sparkmedia.com. Or check us out on Instagram or Facebook at Spark Media. Links and episode notes. Interested in telling stories? Apply to be a Spark storyteller today. We're looking for writers, editors, composers, voice talent, and more. It takes a village to tell a story, and we need you. Link in episode notes. Audio production copyright 2024 by Spark Media LLC, all rights reserved.